my most confident episode ever. Hello, welcome to Cahoots. I'm Kate Devaney. This is
Ben Collins.
And hopefully you've listened to us before and you're just tuning back in.
Yeah, so we don't have to do like the full long explanation. But yeah, the Cahoots is the podcast where we... Bless you, Kate.
Why, thank you. Allergy season, or as I like to say, every day.
Yeah, because I have cats.
Yeah.
Well. We come up with titles and we pitch each other funny or interesting ideas for movies about those titles. And today we've got one that we haven't really talked about much.
We went like back and deep into the bank because we keep this ongoing list.
Yeah, like a running list of just things that come up in conversation, or if one of us like sees something funny or thinks something funny and texts it to the other one and I put it on a list. So like some of these come in big bursts where if we're like talking specifically about it, we'll go, oh, try this, whatever. And then whenever we do this, we just sort of take a stab at one. And so this is one that we haven't, I don't even remember. I feel like it was maybe you that...
Yeah, well, because I think, I mean, I love...
Should we just say what it is first?
Yeah, it's the Wasps.
Wasps or the Wasps.
The Wasps. Yeah. And you know, just any word that has multiple meanings is fun. So
in this case, we're thinking there's obviously, are they insects?
Yes.
Yeah, they have four legs. We're not
screenwriting
scientists.
Stops and
yeah.
Science starts.
I mean, I used to know. Entomology.
There you go.
Yeah.
Ben for the win.
As opposed to etymology, which is the where words, you know, like the derivation of words.
Oh, my God. They're so close.
Yeah, I know. Right?
Yeah, we're so far.
I believe I'm right. Etymology is words. Entomology is creatures, insects.
So there's a Wasp movie, which makes me think of My Girl immediately, but it doesn't have
Ooh.
To. My Girl could have been called The Wasps.
That's such a dark title for that. Where it's like the whole movie, you're like, why is it called that?
And it's just right at the end, they get you.
Did you ever hear about that movie? There was a movie, I might fuck this up, I believe it was called Remember Me. And like Zac Efron or somebody was in it.
Didn't see it, but was that Taylor Schilling as well?
Did you hear the whole story about what the movie ended? So there's this movie called Remember Me that came out.
Nicholas Sparks? Nicholas Sparks adjacent?
It's definitely, I mean, it's adjacent at the least. It was definitely like, you know, billed as that kind of thing. Okay, 2010.
Schilling, right?
Robert Pattinson. I way fucked that up. Okay. Robert Pattinson and Emile DeRaven.
Oh gosh, yeah. No, we're thinking about, yeah.
And not Nicholas Sparks. It was an original screenplay. My understanding, I never saw it, I'm sure it's fine or whatever, but like I never saw it, but I remember it was like marketed as like it's just like a sappy Nicholas Sparks like kind of young people romance thing, and this was like right after Twilight and stuff like that. And it was, and so Pattinson, that's the reason to go see it, is just another Pattinson movie. They were clearly just marketing it to girls that liked Robert Pattinson. And so like I remember like seeing the trailer in a movie theater or something and being like, what the fuck is that movie? What exactly is it? Why is it called that? And it's just a romantic, you know, teen drama that ends after they declare their love. And then he's like, I'll see you next week or whatever. And then it's like he goes into the World Trade Center and September 11th happens.
Oh, my God.
So the whole
I do vaguely remember this now.
Like, yeah, it was like the title is just solely in reference to the fact that he dies.
God, and they just put it right in the...
If My Girl was called The Wasps, and the whole thing, why is it called that? And it's like, well, because he dies from... God.
Oh my God. How,
I mean, the Remember Me one would have only been better if it was called like Never Forget or whatever, or like, you know, like, but like, I guess, I mean,
it should have been Never Forget.
I mean, that would have probably given it away though. You know, so like that was Remember Me is like the Nicholas Sparks way of saying that or something.
Oh my God. I remember that now that you have explained all that.
I could be totally, that's how I heard it. I'm pretty
no,
sure.
No, it happened. Cause I remember like hearing that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, yikes. So the My Girl version, The Wasps.
No, I mean, I don't... there's a My Girl... There's just, like, a personal allergy to wasps, but...
But like, what I mean, there's clearly there's like the picks, like the, I mean, we typically make
like ants.
Yeah, sorry, it's not Pixar, it's DreamWorks. There's the DreamWorks movie that is like ants, but it's about wasps. But in that version, they probably do like go to the Hamptons and like have a, oh, have a, that, you know,
yes,
a fish, you know, like a fishing boat or whatever. Like they, it's like it's basically just like wasps that are wasps, you know, yeah, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant wasps. And so it's like that would be sort of like that whole like the sequence in Annie Hall where he goes to visit her family, you know, where he's like the Jewish guy that's like out of place around all these like Wisconsin like waspy white people, and like it would just be that as a movie. So it's like somebody, it's like what's the Meet the Parents?
Yes,
it's like Meet the Parents.
I mean, Meet
like,
the Parents could have been called The Wasps.
Oh sure, yeah, yeah, good, yeah. Another good one.
Well, because I mean that was so when we first when this, I think when I first texted you and said The Wasp as a title, a Cahoos title, it was exactly like some movie about the insect, but then also like, yes, some sort of Meet the Parents-esque mm-hmm. kind of story, some fish out of water, like,
yeah,
because like, it is such a funny world. Like, if
the world of insect yeah. relationships or the world of white Anglo-Saxon,
the world of an insect wasp having sex with a human wasp. No. No, the like,
yeah, because they're like anthropomorphic animated wasps is what we're getting at.
No, yeah, that's see now we're getting like Tim and Eric, like some weird.
No, but I mean, no. But I'm saying like ants, they have human like understandable like emotions and stuff. We're talking about it in that way, right?
Well, no, I was now just gonna pitch like the Hamptons.
Oh, wasp you're pulling into just the normal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No, I was joking when I said no. I was saying an insect wasp having sex with a human person.
Yeah.
That can't happen.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
No, you were going for it though. I like that. You've got a fighter spirit in you, Ben, that I didn't know it was there.
Well, so wait, so okay, but,
no,
I'm,
but
I'm getting
we're
started.
toggling.
Yeah, we're getting lost.
I mean, I think the thing. So just going with meet the Fockers, like there's just more to mine there in terms of. You know, Wedding Crashers does it too.
Yeah. So you could, yeah, I mean, all of those movies could just be called that, or like, well, I guess not. Wedding Crashers has a broader.
Get Out could have been called The Wasps.
Oh, that's true. That's pretty good, actually. Yeah, you could. Yeah, so there's, I mean, there's like movies like that that it just depends on like if you were going to do that, like what would make this one unique? If you were going to write a new movie that was of that sort of same like fish out of water, visiting the family structure, like why this?
Oh
one?
My God! So yeah, we're saying Meet the Fockers and Get Out. When you're speaking on the specific fish out of water element, are the same movie.
Yeah. And I would actually say that I enjoyed Get Out significantly more, and that Meet the Parents was far more uncomfortable for me.
But you don't, you're uncomfortable. You can't watch Michael Scott on The Office because
I get too sad. I get embarrassed for other people. And just like, yeah, I just...
I will say there are... You know how, like, are you ever doing mundane tasks and think of characters from movies?
Sure.
And, like, moments, right? There's one, so I have a couple of those. I have moments from, in Doctor Strangelove.
Mm-hmm.
The president specifically.
Oh, sure. Merkin Muffley.
Yeah, Merkin Muffley. I have moments.
Such a good, that name got much funnier to me as I got older.
Oh, it's so good. I actually had forgotten that, so thank you.
Mm-hmm.
But there are lines from that movie that I think about and like his delivery on them. And other movies too, but one of them that like I was literally putting the key in my deadbolt the other day in my apartment. And I like getting my keys out of my purse and mm-hmm. like starting to put it. And as I was doing that, I literally thought of Owen Wilson and Meet the Fockers saying, "We call this a hopa." I salvaged the wood from a like a church in Nantucket or something. Like just this sort of like asinine, just fucking, you want to just rip his teeth out.
Oh God.
But
no.
You just love, he's such a dick.
He was,
and it's so great.
That was right in that period where he was always so
we
good
call it
in
a
that way.
Hopa.
Just like his, because I sort of,
or your people call it a hopa. That's what it is. Yeah, that's what it is.
Your people call it a hopa.
Hopa. We salvaged it from wood and from a chapel in Nantucket.
Oh my God.
Just, Oh, it's so good.
Well, it was the same. It was around the same time as Zoolander, and like it was like he was so good at just like always having like just like nailing the delivery in some specific way that would do that. Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. Someone, wait. I just had a thing. I don't know what the movie is, but similarly to Tarantino casting Travolta mm-hmm. in Pulp Fiction, someone should cast Owen Wilson. And I know, like, he's had his own like issues with addiction and whatever, but like having him come in some like crazy splashy role
is absolutely.
Like completely like but like against, you know, type.
Supposedly I think there's a movie that like Luke told me about or something, that there's a movie like pretty early on where he does play a serial killer, which, and I don't know if it's actually any good, but I'm pretty sure there is a movie, yeah, which I would be very very curious to see for that exactly that reason. But that'll happen, though, I feel like. I mean, is he not in anything right now?
I don't know. I feel, I mean, he's definitely, he's been on the headlines for a minute, but I'm sure he's.
Oh, he did some voice acting in something. Or no, maybe that's, yeah, I mean, I guess, no, he was in
like,
a couple things.
What is
things.
A role that
yeah.
Owen Wilson could get cast in right now? Similarly to Travolta playing,
The Minus Man is the one I think I'm thinking of. The where he plays a serial killer. Sorry.
No, you're fine. Like, similar to Vince Vega. Like, what is something that, for Owen Wilson, is so left field that you sort of come back around to it?
No, this is a fun game. I mean, I would like to see him.
People love him. Like, that's the thing.
I think you'd want to see him be funny in something that isn't exactly a comedy.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I can see it in my head and I'm not quite there yet, but like almost like part of me wants to say like a straight role in a Coen Brothers not comedy.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like where just like the particulars of his performance add flavor to
No Country for Old Men.
Yeah, which I mean, that's like, it's hard to, that's when you say that, it's hard to not immediately like kind of put him into his like comedy role and go, oh, well, he'd never fit into that. But it's sort of like, well, if he was just playing, he's from Texas, like he knows those guys, like he's a good actor. It's like the idea that he could have played like the Garrett Dillahunt part or something, which is the silliest part in the movie, but in terms of like, he would have been age appropriate and it would have made sense. But it's like,
no, but it's kind of like,
he could have played the Woody Harrelson part.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I was about to say that. And then I was going to say, I wasn't a huge fan of Three Billboards for like other reasons, multiple reasons, but the Woody Harrelson part is the kind of thing that I think he would be great in.
That's a great example. Like
that specific part.
If he was in, yeah, I think that like it's a movie like that, which is to say, you know, obviously somewhat intentionally Coen Brothers-esque, but yeah, it's like just thinking of like, well, get a dramatic role that isn't him like being crazy or being super serious. Like you're not asking him to go play Atticus Finch, you know, like it's not, but it's like just a serious movie that has real characters or like textured characters, and then just let him be a character. I mean, honestly, Tarantino, like literally, like if he was just played a role in any Tarantino, if he was like, I mean, like there's so many fucking people in that Charles Manson one or whatever that he's coming out with soon. It's like, if you just told me he was playing a cop in that, I'd be like, oh sure. You know, like, yeah, just be an actor. Like don't have to be Owen Wilson, the comedy guy in the comedy, I think is really the answer. Cause it's like, if he were to go play like, you know, Ted Bundy or, you know, Hitler or something at this point, you'd be like, oh well, you're really reaching for it, like we get it, you're serious now. But like, yeah, just be in a good movie.
Yeah, which was like that perfect Vince Vega moment that is so iconic of just taking somebody who
mm-hmm.
had it in them. All right, cool. Well,
we got way off track there, but I thought that was interesting because I like to play that game of like, what would you put somebody in? Yeah. It's definitely like, it's a good way to sort of exercise, because sometimes that's enough. I mean, look, I mean, we should all be so lucky to be successful as writers on a level where we are like friends with like bankable actors, because like, I do think that that's like, there's a great luxury to that. Like, I mean, there's actors that I like, you know, have met or know through friends or something like that, where like, it's like, okay, if I wrote something just for them, like I could probably get it to them maybe, but it doesn't guarantee anything in that sense of like, yeah, like if Tarantino just goes, oh, you know what? I'd like to see, I mean, this isn't how it happened, but it's like, oh, I'd like to see Jamie Foxx as like a badass black cowboy or whatever. Like, you could just have that impulse and then just, you know, like if you on that level, you could just do that. And that could be where that came from. And I think there's something so fun about being inspired by like a person and their energy and kind of like what they do so much to where like you wish that could just be how, to some degree, how movies actually began, you know, but one day.
Yeah. Fortunately, maybe. Well, the power tends to shift in different directions, but yeah.
Sorry, I went on kind of a rant there.
No, I like it. Rant away.
Yeah. Wasp.
No, I've had the same. I did actually have a meeting where someone said, oh, I talked to actress's name here the other day, and she's looking for like super weird parts.
Mm-hmm.
Would you want her to be to like, would you want me to talk to her? And I was like, well, yeah, because I actually just said her name like to that mm-hmm. producer right before, and I was like, okay, well,
yeah, no, I mean, that's,
it's great, you know, but that's still, that's how, I mean, it takes time.
It does, but that's how, I mean, that is how, I mean, on a business level, actors do still get movies made, and so it does seem like,
no,
the dream,
true.
The dream is if you're David O. Russell. And you have, you know, this relationship with Jennifer Lawrence where, like, literally, I mean, that Joy movie, it's my least favorite of the ones they did together. But I still find it kind of, I mean, it's charming and fun. But, like, I think clearly, like, he was just inspired. Like, he heard about that and was like, oh, if I just did that movie with her in it, that would be a thing. And it's like, yes. And then you go make it. It's like, yeah, it would be amazing to just be able to think that way. Like, if we were just like, what if Owen Wilson kind of was a CIA agent? Like, let's call Owen Wilson and see what he thinks of it. You know?
It kind of seems like Adam McKay's career at this point, too.
Yeah, that seems like, I mean, that's
He's just like, what is some crazy current event
mm-hmm.
that I can get?
I mean, all the Will Ferrell movies seem like they're just that anyways. It's like, what if you was a yes. race car driver?
Well, no, I mean, this is like so basic, but I mean, I love Masterclass, the mm-hmm. thing. And it's it's
the video
so
tutorial yes. service.
And like, but I'm a professional writer and I think that shit is awesome. I watched
You've almost
all
convinced
them.
Me to do it, which I was kind of making fun of it the first time yeah. we came up and you were like, no, I like that thing. And I was like, oh, okay. And, but since
but I remember the first, so I think Kevin Spacey was the first one to sort of like, he was the big first professional.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah. I think
person.
You're right. Yeah.
And then very quickly they had like Serena Williams does tennis. And yeah. Christina Aguilera does singing and...
No, I remember when the Spacey thing was new, and then I remember forgetting about it and hearing about it again when someone told me that Sorkin did one.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I mentioned that to you one time. Like, I was being slightly, like, a dick about it. I was like, oh, like, Aaron Sorkin Masterclass things, and you were like, no, I watched that. It was really good. And I was like, oh, okay, and you've since sent me clips from the Apatow one.
Yeah.
And
oh,
then I'm
yeah,
like,
so
oh, no,
say.
That's really interesting, yeah.
Well, and I think, you know, it is one of those things where... I think with anything you're, you know, studying, practicing, doing, like the best possible philosophy. I mean, my sister is getting an accounting degree right now, which couldn't be further from screenwriting in a lot of ways, but there's so much crossover in terms of like being open and mm-hmm. reading and like just trying to soak up, be a sponge and soak up information and knowledge. And I think, you know, exposing yourself as much information and experience yeah. and any of that, and then just being judicious about like what works for you, and also just being forgiving too. Like I got really pleased with myself just knowing like I'm past the point of trying to like figure out a process, and every script I write is just a totally different thing. And
yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
You know, the idea of like, I mean, the first question any screenwriter or I guess director probably gets is like, you know, what's your process and how do you do mm-hmm, it? It's like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, and then, so it's kind of fun, like, you know, hearing like Judd Apatow talks about like some of his movies came from getting drunk with his friends.
Yeah.
And some of them came from incredibly serious conversations, you know? So it's like, he talks about Knocked Up coming from a conversation with Seth about... So Seth had, what he says is Seth had a bunch of ideas. You know, they had worked together. He had cast Seth on mm-hmm. Freaks and Geeks. And so they had worked together and now he's trying to make, you know, his earn his keep as an actor. And Apatow is like producing things now. So, you know, he comes to him and he's like, has all these kind of like science fiction comedy ideas. Mm-hmm. And Judd's like, it's just not what I do. Then it's not that they don't mm-hmm. work, but I just don't do that. And he was saying like, what's his movie he ended up making? The World's End or End of the World or
This is the End.
This is the End. There you go.
World's End was the Edgar Wright movie.
Yeah. I love Edgar Wright.
Mm-hmm.
Like that and Hot Fuzz. Mm-hmm. And obviously
Scott Pilgrim. Yeah.
Anyway, Judd says is he said, so we're sitting here and we're kind of spitballing and, you know, I imagine getting drunk on a like Saturday mm-hmm. night or something. But he said, we're talking and he's telling me these things and I'm sitting here going, yeah, not really the movie I make, mm-hmm. like, not really the thing. And then he goes, no, think more like what is something that could happen to you? What's something that mm-hmm. you could do that's just dumb and stupid
mm-hmm.
that like you're a young guy, you're in your 20s, you're mm-hmm. like trying to figure your life out. Like, what if you got a girl pregnant? And he goes, oh, okay. And like went off and wrote a thing and then they just like talked a couple weeks later. And it's like now they got the movie going. It's like, what if I'm just a idiot with a website about boobs?
Yeah.
Got a girl pregnant who's like way smarter than me and has her shit together and I'm the idiot.
See, and it's almost sort of like, but it's that simple if you're like, because I really do believe that like in that moment, even if the way it's described there is like Judd's the one that sort of is doing all the quote unquote work, because I do think that like the energy and everything is the work is all of it. Because what I'm saying is that I don't think he would have had that idea if Seth Rogen literally wasn't standing in front of him or sitting in front of him. It's kind of like, because Judd's not going to go like, oh, what if there was some guy like blah, 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 and he gets some girl pregnant? He's like, what if you got some girl pregnant? And obviously the movie's not about Seth Rogen, but he's obviously that was the inspiration, is sort of thinking on that level and going like, yeah, that's so I don't know. I guess it's I mean, you can the thing is, we can do that for ourselves without actually knowing actors, because enough times, like, I don't know if we've ever talked about this, but like a lot of times, like Luke and I will cast an actor with a distinct way of speaking in our minds when we write a character, so that we are intentionally writing lines with some kind of flavor built into them, at least in our minds, even if it's just when you hear it in your head. Like Matthew McConaughey, for instance, has a very distinct speech pattern. So if you write in McConaughey's speech pattern, it doesn't mean anyone else who reads it's going to pick up on that, but it gives it some sort of automatic, you're thinking about that guy, not this like, you know, sort of anonymous like Ken doll of a person that doesn't exist that just delivers your lines robotically. It's like, no, well, who would it be? And like, you know, whether or not you ever get to script to Matthew McConaughey, it doesn't really fucking matter. It's like, in theory, that just informs your writing. But it's very convenient when you have a talented, viable actor sitting in front of you that you could be inspired by.
Well, and I worked on Men in Black 3
in New York.
And I'll tell you, like, I was both mildly surprised, but also incredibly tickled at reading. Because this is the third one.
Uh-huh.
We know Will Smith's in it because not only is he the lead actor, but he's an executive producer on it.
Yeah.
And running the show. And, you know, David Koepp, who wrote the first one, ended up being brought back on to do a rewrite on the third one. But reading these lines,
mm-hmm.
it was like, I mean, I got to one of the, like, it was like, they're in a, like, Chinatown restaurant,
mm-hmm.
and then one of the fish reveals itself to be an alien.
Mm-hmm.
And I shit you not, like, I don't know if this made it into the movie, but I remember reading on the page, it was like, oh no, fish, you done fucked up, like, you done messed up this time, fish. And I was like, and I was embarrassed to read it. I was like, this is like white girl. Just like, I don't know. I feel like I'm, and I know Dave, and I have met David, and I'm just like, he's gotta feel the same way. Like, he's,
oh no,
you know, he's like
messed up.
I'm like, I don't know anything about David. Like, I don't know his background or anything, but I'm like, I met you and you were like a 6-foot tall white guy with like, you know, architect glasses, and I'm like, what? You're writing that line? I'm just like, that's gotta be so awkward. I know Ethan Coen may have written that line and he did the first draft, but he's also like a Harvard
lampoon
white guy. I'm like,
it also could have been Will Smith literally in a script meeting being like, you know what I would say? like it could have come from anywhere. Yeah. But the perception though being that you have to sit down and do that is,
and yeah, and by the way, the entire, like, you know, I was like a lowly crew member just reading this going, oh man, like there's something weird reading something so specific to Will Smith.
Oh, and, sure. No, you know, yeah.
This is just so different than, like, you know, I can't, you could never put that in a spec.
Yeah, no, because it does just read that way. And I've definitely seen that, like, in specs where you can tell they want something so bad. Because that's the trick, too, is it's like, you know, writing in Samuel L. Jackson's voice is one thing. I mean, that he's another one that has very, yeah, very distinct tone that, like, you could probably do it and it would whatever, but so we'll go back to McConaughey. You could write in McConaughey's voice, but when you know the brief amount of, you know, character description, you're not like, he's a, you know, oily, tan, wiry, taut 53-year-old charmer, you know, like, you don't describe him as McConaughey if you're gonna do it. So it's like, even if you did do it in this spec, it's like, yeah, hopefully you wouldn't describe Will Smith, but it's like, you're right, probably if you did it, no matter what, the very Will Smith lines are gonna cut through. It'd be like if you wrote a character to be like, you know, like 70s Clint Eastwood or something like that. It's like, no, everybody gets it, you know, like that's a very iconic thing at this point. There's no getting around that. But
yeah,
that's really fucking funny.
And now every line of, well, I think more like every other line of my script is just a wink and a nod at a specific actor. Yeah.
Oh my God. I want to watch Men in Black 3, but I have no doubt that if that's in there, I have no doubt that whatever it is not as funny as you describing it and me imagining it.
Yeah, me sitting in like a ice cold windowless art department room in fucking like Kaufman Astoria Studios in Brooklyn, just shivering, reading the line, "No fish, you done messed up this time." Oh, no. On like white pages, just
it wasn't.
And I'm skimming it for, like, you know, some dumb clearance reason or something.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's just the most mundane.
It was white
work.
Pages. They weren't at like double goldenrod at that point.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, they had circled. Yeah, no, no, I'm going to one up you, Ben. We'd already gone through the rotation twice. So
you were all like triple white?
Oh, yeah, something like that.
Jeez.
Well, you know, they had, I mean,
it's a famously troubled production. That's why I made the joke in the first place.
Which the movie actually turned out fine and it made a bunch of money. Yeah. But yeah, I think the last time I checked, which was maybe 4 years ago, the budget was $280 million.
Yeah, I think
that's... For a Sony...
I remember hearing 300, but that's probably... I mean, you know, they always report less, probably. But yeah, I mean, because it was fucking insane.
So many people quit. And not just, like, below-the-line crew members, but, like, producers being like, you know, get a handle on...
Mm-hmm.
What's happening?
But, you got to be there.
Yeah, it was really cool to see as an art department PA that got to, you know, go to the scenic. We built like the 1960 Coney Island Pier, and
wow.
I remember walking into the scenic department, and I mean, in my memory, which I know is exaggerated at this point, but it was like half of a football field, just all scenic artists hand painting signs to be 1960s signage. And then the only places that we could, so like, this is actually an interesting random nerdy art architectural thing, but in New York, you know, you'll have these big open spaces, but they always have columns and pilasters and, you know, running throughout like an open room, because unless you have an exterior structure that's strong enough where you have no columns in the middle. And the only places those exist in New York City are the armories. So we had like the five armories, the Bronx, Brooklyn, we had two in Brooklyn, one in Queens. It was like our sets were all in like these armories.
You haven't seen the trailer
crazy.
For the Gotti movie, have you?
Oh yes.
No, you just because you were like, we have the five armories. Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx,
Staten two in Brooklyn.
Yeah, but it's like I thought you were gonna literally list every borough, and that's really
just
two in Brooklyn. And they're probably not one in Manhattan. Maybe.
No, we did.
Yeah.
We had the Manhattan,
like Lower Manhattan.
It was,
or something.
Yeah, it's in, I want to say the Lower East Side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So wait, which borough didn't get an armory? Staten Island?
Maybe. We didn't go to it.
I went to Staten Island once. I got off
did
the
it
ferry.
It smell like garbage? Don't need to even answer that. The answer's yes.
I got off the ferry and smoked a cigarette and then got back on.
It's Staten Island Ferry is one of the best.
Oh, I fucking, it was an incredible evening for me. Drink way too much beer on the boat just because the novelty of being able to do it. It's like two beers there, two beers back. I was like drunk by the time I got back to the financial district or whatever. Like,
it's so fun.
Yeah. No, that was a good day. Staten Island. Wu-Tang Clan.
Verrazano Bridge.
Mm-hmm. Sure. They have a bridge.
Well, Verrazano goes from Staten Island. Well, you go to New Jersey, Staten Island, right? Staten Island? And then over to...
I guess. Oh, I don't know that bridge.
Wait, Verrazano you're the one that lives there. Brooklyn and... It's Brooklyn to Staten Island, I think. It connects... Verrazano Bridge. Here we go. Yeah, Staten Island. That's right.
Okay.
Staten Island to Brooklyn.
So it's not like if you don't get the ferry, you're not like fucked. It just takes a long time to get there. I actually had no idea like how many connections.
Well, that's going a different direction, right? So like,
No, what I'm saying, just like it's not like you're trapped off like off island if you don't get the okay.
And then the ferry's there. Well, then there's the Battery Park Tunnel that goes to Brooklyn.
I don't know about any of these things.
You have to pay that one. It costs. I think it was more than the Lincoln Tunnel when I lived there. But that was also...
We're just talking about New York transit.
Wasps, really, what? I actually remember going... I remember... Like, I knew the term wasp.
Uh-huh.
And then I think probably from... I don't know, just my dad at some point. But I remember going to a party one time.
Uh-huh.
And I go in. My friend... worked at Huffington Post, and he was like, oh, you know, he's like, this, it could be kind of cool. I go down to like, the Bowery, and it was like some penthouse thing. We go up there, and he's like, hey, just to warn you, kind of a waspy crowd. And that was like the first time I heard it used, like in a context that wasn't just like reading
the Gilmore
about
Girls
it
or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sure enough, it was like, you know, everybody's the head of something.
Yeah, yeah.
That you've never heard of. And then they all went to like a
Ivy League prep school. And prep schools and
played
lacrosse.
They're all road.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They all have horses, summer houses.
Yeah.
I don't really, I haven't interacted, I guess, a ton with that particular crowd myself. But a movie about a girl from Staten Island that meets a guy and then goes to visit his family and they're wasps.
Hey, tie the two worlds together like the Verrazano Bridge.
Yeah, that would be, you know, something like that. That's like the kind of movie that like...
It's a different take on like...
It would be like, that would have been like a mid-90s Jennifer Lopez movie.
It's a little bit like the reverse
or
of
like...
My
Cousin Vinny.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was going to say My Big Fat Greek Wedding, but sure. Like kind of the, you know, just two.
Yeah.
Like the Greek versus.
Who lives
versus
in Staten?
The
Italian? Is that? I have no idea.
Probably. I mean, that's the stereotype is that.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
I mean.
That's what, I'm not going to look it up, but like, yeah, it's just like somebody from whatever the dominant culture.
It's okay.
On Staten
Island. I will say, I'm trying to just be honest here. As a...
At least you saying incredibly racist things. Like, look, I'm just trying to be honest here.
Yeah, the next... when you move to New York and you're like a creative person, I like an a white chick from the suburbs of Missouri. Mm-hmm. The, you know, Manhattan is always the center, and yeah. but no one can afford it unless, you know, you're making investment banker money. And then from there you go like Brooklyn's the next coolest. Mm-hmm. And then Queens is like mm-hmm. accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your three out of the five boroughs. Yeah. And the Bronx
if you go to a baseball
like,
game.
Or if you go to the Botanical Garden.
Okay. Didn't know about that.
Or the zoo.
Sure. Oh yeah.
And then there's nothing that takes you to the Staten Island. So it's like, they are both like, they're on the opposite ends of each other and they're both just like their own different versions of like, I have no reason to go there,
yeah,
you know,
alienation.
Like,
no,
except for,
funny,
you know,
yeah.
Bronx. Yeah. But I mean, Bronx is also like the city. I mean, the way that New York and most cities
mm-hmm.
handle low-income housing is like a terrible thing, right? Like,
is that the Bronx's deal?
Well, I mean, there's a super famous case in St. Louis called mm-hmm. Pruitt-Igoe. Unfortunately, same architect that built the World Trade Center that fell, that guy had a rough life and yeah. rough career, but. Oh, But Pruitt-Igoe is a super, super famous case in architecture history of building low-income housing and uh-huh. how one design and idea gets sort of pushed into a corner by policy and mm-hmm. budget cuts and all those kinds of things into a situation. It's behavioral architecture, so it's like how do people respond to certain environments, and then how does that end up like adding to violence or adding
sure,
and
sure.
part of that is like if you put people in rectangles and just throw them down on the ground and mm-hmm. then, you know, there's like no interest spent in like grass or trees mm-hmm. or anything, so literally it's just like concrete buildings and like concrete roads mm-hmm. and just mud everywhere else. That is, I mean, even just adding grass or adding mm-hmm. trees or adding anything or giving them something other than a rectangle mm-hmm. that's just like some other, you know, interesting element, like all these kinds of things. So the Bronx is like, there are certain parts of Brooklyn that are just is projects after projects. And mm-hmm. you see that like it just breeds a certain depression, you know, and then subsequently like violence and whatever, but the Bronx is like, it's kind of like those, I mean, there are a whole lot of projects that got just thrown there mm-hmm. and then, I mean, it's what it is, you know, they take money out
of my favorite authors is from there.
Yeah.
Don DeLillo is from the Bronx,
which you have people like Cardi B and Jennifer Lopez come mm-hmm. out of the Bronx. It's not, there's
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Hell yeah, girl.
My favorite member of the House of Representatives.
But there is there's a whole lot of, I mean, you see it like going, like in Brooklyn, I think, like I lived by Lefferts Gardens, like across mm-hmm. the street, which it's just like where Clinton Hill meets Bed-Stuy. Mm-hmm. But you go deeper into Brooklyn and you hit like MLK projects goes right up against Marcus Garvey projects, right? Mm-hmm. So you go through like just blocks and blocks of like,
that's,
you know,
wild,
just
yeah.
like nothing. Like you go from trees and like grass and like birds chirping, and they just don't give a shit because they're not. They're like, well, we're not going to spend money on that, you know. But, man, no, but the Bronx,
New York City.
No, but the Bronx, like I will just say, as a white girl,
mm-hmm.
like everyone goes, no. Look, just look for apartments in Brooklyn. Brooklyn's always gonna be better. You want to live in Brooklyn, like you'd rather live in Brooklyn, the Bronx, like just everyone goes, don't mm-hmm. even look at the Bronx, like
mm-hmm.
if you, unless you're taking a train straight to Yankee Stadium
yeah.
or yeah, and
you didn't do it.
No, I mean I go into like Harlem and like look mm-hmm. around, but I mean, I don't know, is it self-preservation or just like
Well, there's no reason to prove anything to anybody.
No, that too. Yeah. Yeah,
you're not making a point with where you get an apartment at.
And I also don't think I'm like fixing things or fixing. You know, I don't have any sort of like. They don't need to be like. But I recognize because like driving through, especially just more Brooklyn than the Bronx, but you know, you 100% see where our own government fails people in just the most basic, simple sense of like giving like hope, like the understanding. And I mean, I haven't gone to school for architecture, like it's design matters. Like people respond to inviting places. It actually has an impact on your mental health, and people can go, oh, it's a luxury and who fucking cares, but it matters. And you know, if all you see are just concrete rectangles that are, you know, 20 stories high all around you all the time, and there's no green and nothing and no wildlife, no animals, nothing, then like that fucking fucks you up.
Yeah. We should, you should watch, High Rise, the movie based on the J.G. Ballard novel about like this like luxury building that like, it's like an imaginary thing from like the 70s of like, oh, it's like, you know, like, I mean, they have them all now where there's like a grocery store in the basement and you basically get everything in this one building and all these people that live there, and then just like how the whole thing becomes like a sort of microcosm of society and breaks down and turns into anarchy. And like, it's supposed to be nice, not you know, but it's sort of the opposite of what you're saying, but I think you would appreciate that movie considering everything you just said.
I mean, going back to like Pruitt-Igoe, I mean, basically it was this, it's such an interesting study, and I mean, there are people that have written dissertations about it. I mean, it's super famous and got destroyed. But it started out as this patterning after some of the international design, mid-century modern stuff coming out of like Le Corbusier and Mies van der Rohe, and this idea of these beautiful things that were happening in Europe. And it's like, okay, how can we have this kind of like community living apartment style stuff here? And that's where he began, you know, that's what he pitched.
And
then budgets got slashed. How can we do this? We need twice the units but half the money. And you just saw this evolution of that. And then
that's a good movie right there, probably.
Yeah,
just like, it sort of sounds like,
and there were things.
It sort of sounds like almost like an absurdist, like a Kafka-esque, the whole thing, because it's like something like Synecdoche, New York, or something like that. But like where it's like just seeing what a dream was and how it was like reduced and just like death by a thousand cuts of like this conceptual thing like turning into this nightmare. And like, I don't know how you would show that visually if it's like.
Well, there's a lot, but I mean.
But like almost like you, but like,
well, because I mean, there's stuff that happened. Like, for example, there's a, you know, like skip stop elevators are a thing where this was like a new technology in mid-century architecture, and the whole idea is that like you, instead of stopping at every floor, you're stopping at every other floor, and then what you do is you design a sort of like two level height community space. So if you can imagine, you know, in an environment like. You know, like a middle class university where everybody's there and they're all like 18-year-old, like well behaved, you know, I don't know, well behaved like people who are like getting off. And so you have this community, because there were dorms in my university like this where you got off and it was skip stop elevators. And so you have multiple levels that are now having to like, they're forced to sort of talk to each other and, you know, be in a community, which is all fun and good. And actually, you know, from a logistics standpoint, works, you know, mechanically, right? So there's an argument for that. So they decided, okay, we're going to do that. Well, in that community, you've already squeezed out all these other resources for these people. The people that are living there, then they go, oh, what ended up happening is it attracted a community of people that go, oh, well, this mother and her child can't get off at this floor. They have to go up to this floor to walk out, to then walk across, which is sold as like a community building experience.
It becomes a dangerous,
but then
thing.
It becomes a place where thieves can stand there and be like, you know, hold up people and do whatever. Jesus. It's like, it became the social experiment.
Like a bottleneck,
it was like
crazy. Kind of,
yeah. That's... So in all of these, there were so many, I mean, you talk about, again, in architecture, like wall finishings, the way that they handle like heating, plumbing, stuff like that. Like there's so many sort of studies that came out of that building and complex in particular. And it was like, just like, there was like 20 of them. Like you just look at the sunset and it's just like,
oh, God,
these like rectangles in the mud. It was like very,
well, like, but if you were going to do, this is just me thinking out loud, cause I'm so fascinated. If you were going to do a movie about the construction of this thing and how the plan devolved into the reality, it would be interesting. And I don't know enough about it to know, like, based on where his plan was to what eventually happened, like if it changes enough to make what I'm about to say make sense. But like, almost like if the whole movie existed inside the building as it changed. So like almost like an experimental theater piece where like the meetings about the building are existing within like an imaginary version of the building as he's seeing it at that point, if this makes any sense. So you see what it was supposed to be and he's there talking with the city planner people or whatever. And there's like debates. It's almost like it's an interesting, or would be interesting to me. I don't know if it would be a lot of people talking about buildings, but you see like when they make him compromise, then the entire set changes to be the compromise.
Like
so it's like it goes and reduced. So by the end of it, and when he's at his lowest point with the reality of what he's done, he's literally existing in this miserable space, like you're sort of describing.
It's kind of cool way to do like an architecture movie.
Yeah, that's just me thinking out loud for like, what's a really interesting, like, you know, when I say like Synecdoche, New York, or something like that.
Yeah.
What is the sort of conceptual reason that this movie would be interesting to watch besides just seeing city planning fail? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, I don't know. That would be cool.
I mean, another, this is not like we've gone so far off the WASP thing, but.
Yeah, but this is just a prompt.
Yeah. No, but then another version of it is, and I'd have to go back and look at history and see like if this is, cause this is all speculation right now, but, based on like, you know, mild knowledge of relationships, but I know that he was inspired by a lot of like Le Corbusier's designs. So there also could be a version of this movie where, you know, you have Le Corbusier, and even if I don't know that the timelines match up or any of that, but if you did have this sort of parallel tandem thing where Le Corbusier is building his building, and they're, you know, you kind of put, you jam them into the same timeline, even if it's, you know, forcing it, but like, they're friends and they're calling each other on the phone, visiting each other's thing. And it's like, yes, I'm doing my thing over here. And yes, I'm doing my thing over here. And it's like the clock starts and then you see them run. And it's like one goes really well and one just completely.
Which is another, like we've talked about Amadeus before, which is a movie that I still haven't seen, but I know enough.
That's a different way of doing Amadeus.
That's what, when you start talking, it's like, oh, this is like an Amadeus movie about two architects. Each setting
maybe
out
are
on a
friends
path. Yeah.
And actually the difference, it's the inverse of Amadeus, whereas instead of jealousy, ego driving the thing, it's like two guys like that are actually rooting for each other. And again, I'm just making up history right now, but like,
well, but you could do it as like you could do it as an almost like epistolary relationship. If you even, no matter what the timelines are, you could have it be a thing where he's writing letters to his hero, who is an older man now and having achieved success, and his hero is writing back the account of his memory of his experience. So you get in our present tense story, we're seeing our main guy go through his bitter suffering of this thing while also intercutting what his mentor is telling him or his inspiration is telling him about the success story at the same time. And we see how they contrast. Like, you could do it even without changing history, I think. I mean, whether or not they ever contacted each other or were alive, but like, so mine still changes history, but it doesn't move the timelines necessarily. It wasn't really that much of a solution, actually.
No, that's really true. No, but that's true though. Cause I mean, as you said, you have not seen Amadeus, but there's a way that they handle that is not too different from what you
gotta
described.
Watch that movie.
I mean, we could watch it right now.
Yeah, maybe we should. I think we just did a whole episode. Because we were...
Whoa.
It was 60 minutes before. I think
Well, let's cut it. All right, well, we started at one thing.
We ended up at a very, very different thing. But I like some of the ideas in this.
Yeah, it was kind of a... This was more of a free form.
And we're still finding our format anyway, so we'll see what people, you know, respond to. I know that...
Yeah, if you liked this, you can tell us. If you don't, you can tell us.
Yeah, you can email us at cahootspodcast@gmail.com. Also, we're both on Twitter. I'm at @BDavisCollins, and I'm constantly on it. So if you actually listen to this show and you want me to talk to you, if you tell me, like, I would be very happy to hear from somebody who actually listened to this. So
yeah, we have honestly, no one tweeting at us so far. Yeah, so and you're
at. Do you know what you? What's yours?
Oh man, I had to look it up.
Oh, I thought that's what you were doing.
No, I picked up my phone and then I got.
I can probably.
I'm at Kate Devaney. C A T E D E V A N E Y.
Yeah. So you know. Let us know what you think, if you like this or there's other things you like. We have sort of different segments that we're sort of, every episode kind of has a different form, so we're still figuring that out. But yeah, and if you like it, subscribe on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you do that. And thanks for listening and thanks for hanging out with us.
Thanks so much. Good night.
Good night.